Good morning, everyone. This morning, the National Broadcasting Company takes you in order to Berlin, London, and Washington in order for reports by staff correspondents on the latest developments in the European situation. And first, let's hear from Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is William C. Kirker calling from Berlin. The political situation in Norway still has not undergone any decisive changes. The Reich refused to deal with either the Quisling self-proclaimed government nor the Rump government, which has set up quarters in the interior of inaccessible Norwegian mountain ranges. In the Wilhelmstrasse, we are told that the German ambassador, Herr Dr. Breuer, is still in direct contact with the king. However, a conclusive agreement upon questions of mutual interest has not been brought about. The German military officials in Norway are still merely conferring with the local authorities, working out problems as they arise. As far as the military situation is concerned, according to today's army communique, more troops have been landed in Narvik, and fortifications have been considerably extended. The communique claims that there have been no British landing maneuvers undertaken on the entire length of the Norwegian coast. However, it does state that various British air attacks have taken place. One over Narvik, which is said to have been warded off, with the British losing one plane. Another larger air attack took place over Bergen, the British losing 8 planes, and German forces admitting only 2. A third air attack was directed against Stavanger, with the Germans claiming to have shot down another British plane. The army report concluded with the statement, along the Western Front, no special events. So much for the army communique, which in effect clearly shows that the fighting on Norwegian soil has by no means ceased, and that Germans cannot lay claim to having the entire situation well in hand as yet. It may be surmised that some fighting is still going on at the various points of vital interest to well-enforced strategic positions. Generally speaking, the scope of the entire occupation with all its various phases of progress at the moment is still too hazy as that one should be able to arrive at a conclusive opinion. British and German reports on various military undertakings throughout this war have never quite coincided, and it would be too much to hope for that this should suddenly be different. As a matter of fact, even the best informed military officials here in Berlin are not in a position to throw any light upon the entire situation. Critical observation, however, would suggest that although the military undertaking as far as Denmark is concerned has been quite successfully completed, the Norwegian occupation is not quite satisfactory. We learn that the Finns and Swedes have laid large mine fields in their territorial waters in the Baltic Sea in order to safeguard their neutrality. German officials are very much pleased because of the attitude of the Swedish government toward Mr. Hambro, former minister of Norway. It is stated here that Mr. Hambro has continuously been sending false statements regarding military events in Norway, and that in effect he is thereby terrorizing Sweden. According to German reports, Sweden has undertaken measures to curtail his activities. The Wilhelmstrasse is mocking at Mr. Churchill's statement that British mines have been laid along the Norwegian coast. It is said here that these mines will have no effect upon the German military undertakings and that they merely represent a line of safety for the British fleet. We learn that Iceland, a Danish possession, will be politically independent for the duration of the German occupation. Although Germany has succeeded in cutting off England from her northern sources of supply, the military undertakings in both Denmark and Norway will have serious effects upon the entire economic structure of the Baltic states, which have been largely dependent upon British imports. Just as to how Germany intends to cope with this problem, which will be of preeminent importance within the near future, cannot be seen as yet. We learn that the Reich is anxious to find a quick solution in this matter. All does not seem to be well in the Balkans either. Some political differences between Italy and Yugoslavia have come up regarding the Danubian question, with the Yugoslav government practically telling Italy to mind her own business. The Balkans are still like a powder keg, and perhaps will be of vital importance within the near future. This is William C. Kirker returning you to the National Broadcasting Company.
You have just heard from our staff reporter in Berlin, and now we hear from our London correspondent. Go ahead, London.
This is London at 2:05. Today's news, fresh news is mostly of the unconfirmed category. For instance, one early afternoon paper's headlines, front page, quote, United States reports from Stockholm, and frankly call them unconfirmed reports. The official Norwegian communique issued from Stockholm last night gathered up much of the information from various sources and provides the first consolidated report covering land activity. From this communique, the Germans last night at least control Oslo and the immediate neighborhood, Kristiansand, Stavanger, Bergen, Trondheim, and in addition to two other points on the southern coast, they're not mentioned. They remain in Narvik, but the Norwegians are reported to be in control of the north except Narvik itself. There are frequent reports of the concentration of Norwegian forces where they will be needed either to oppose German advances or supposedly to close in on German-held positions if and when those tactics are adopted. You already know the reports about the cutting of roads, mining of bridges, and the reestablishment of railway communications cut by bombing. Norwegian government reports are said to be broadcasting regularly now from Halmar. A large concentration of Norwegian troops is reported to be going on at Stenkjer, 50 miles northeast of Trondheim. Personally, it seems unlikely that the actual places where concentrations are being affected will be broadcast or publicly announced for the benefit of German bombing forces. There is continued report of Norwegian efforts to throw a defense ring around and behind Oslo. The Norwegian minister in London broadcast from here last night, asking Norwegians to prevent in any way possible German detachments from making contact with each other. A Stockholm report early this morning by the United Press says that more German troops were landed last night in Halden, near Fredrikstad, in Oslo Fjord. Another from the same source says that General Hawk Nielsen, commander of the Norwegian fort at Kongsvinger, has been dismissed from his post, accused of delaying armaments for the troops and of showing friendly sympathy for the Quisling government. All reports point to the beginning of a crucial fight between the invaders and the Norwegians, supported by Allied attacks from the sea. We can only wait for details. Speculation is busy. Some competent observers, and among them French, say there are three pressing and immediate objectives. One, cut the Jutland-Oslo communications. Retake Narvik. Retake Trondheim. I believe that the other west coast points are considered of secondary importance, according to these observers, because of their lack of good rail communications inland. These people consider, too, that the general plan will be to land Allied forces not at the heavily protected and held points, but near them, to converge with Norwegian inland troops on the objectives in view. Naval experts point out that the shelling from the sea of many of these fjord towns is impossible, that is, by heavy caliber guns. Their elevation range will not permit the high trench mortar trajectory required to get over the surrounding high ground and the short drop to the objectives. So far, the only news of an Allied landing that has been confirmed is that of the survivors of the British destroyer Hardy. Sweden seems closer and closer to this fight, and few believe she can keep clear much longer. Her decision to refuse passage of German troops, most people believe, will find Germany forcing that issue if the Allies succeed in blocking their road to South Norway. Even if the Skagerrak and Kattegat minefields are successful, observers point out that Sweden is likely to be isolated from the West and perhaps forced into increased economic relations with Germany. Fleet Street sees the possibility of its newspapers being smaller next week. Sweden is their source of wood pulp and paper print. Stocks here are said to be large, but replenishments would probably come from Canada. That means more ships when ships are scarce. News from Holland continues to report tension. Many Dutch here believe their country is for it. All public meetings are banned in Denmark. Italy is supposed to be watching very closely the result of the aircraft versus warships tests now going on. Coastlines in Italy's part of the world are similar to the field of present operations. I return you now to the National Broadcasting Company, New York.
Having heard from our members of our European staff, we turn now to our own capital for reaction to events as reported by Earl Godwin. And we take you now to Washington.
Good morning. You know, when the world goes to pieces and civilization explodes and death and terror in every form take hold, there would be a million tales of heroism and pity and horror as the four horsemen of the apocalypse trample down civilization and peace. But the single tale that I want to tell you this morning relates to a Washington woman, society leader and political leader, 70 years of age, although you'd never know it, tall, erect, brave and completely American, I am proud to say, because I refer to the Washington woman we all know here and love as Daisy Harriman, American minister to Norway, Mrs. J. Borden Harriman, who scooped the world on the first story of the German raid on Norway, who stood by until the last gun and is still carrying on, attempting to join the refugee Norway government, having just escaped a strafing from a German bombardment. And it is her job to join the Norwegian government. 70 years old, valiant and stalwart is the name for Daisy. She went to her legation office at 3 o'clock in the morning when the bomb raid started. She took care of every detail in her charge, and she has been under bombing fire 3 times and still carries the red, white, and blue brave and high in her heart. God bless her. At the moment, she's in a rural farm country somewhere near the border just across the line in Sweden. It took this stalwart woman, American minister, 4 days to get from Oslo to the Swedish frontier. And she and her secretary and a maid drove their car along choke roads, through burning cities, highways blocked by barricades, and finally across the ice of a frozen river. Most of the time, German warplanes seemed to be chasing her, roaring overhead. 3 times, she narrowly escaped being bombed. The only way for her to go was through Elverum, and this is a State Department story, comes to us from there, but the German forces were bombing the town, so she could not get through last night. She went to that farmhouse that I'm speaking about, where she spent the night. With the help of the farmer, she and Miss Lindgren, her private secretary, and a maid and a chauffeur, got through barricades this morning and reached a small, safe town, or safer town. Shortly after she'd passed through one town, Elverum, I think it was, German aircraft destroyed nearly every structure in that town except a church and a Red Cross hospital. Mrs. Harriman does not know just where the king and his government are, but she's out trying to find them in the war today. Meantime, significant expansion of the already overwhelming naval program of America, United States of America, comes as the result of a conference with the President in the White House yesterday. House and Senate Naval Chairman and Admiral Stark, the Navy's Operation Chief, sat down to talk things over in the light of developments abroad. The program, as arranged yesterday, if okayed by Congress, suggests a boost mounting to 63 additional ships of the lighter variety, to be spread over a 4-year building period. Well, already the United States Navy is engulfed, you might say, in a building program which experts believe would hold our shores against a world of possibilities. But the program is on paper, largely, or partly. It faces the fact that we do not have American facilities to take care of the whole job. Every plant in the United States of America is now up to its neck with ship orders and ship building and can't take on another job. You know, the President has a great way of deflecting questions from his friends of the press, and yesterday he detoured all around the question of the Monroe Doctrine as a cloak to protect Greenland. But Greenland is right across the water from Labrador in Canada, and earlier this week, Brother Churchill told the world that no German would ever step on Iceland now that it's a part of Denmark, and Denmark's at war. And the question refers to Greenland. Greenland's the world's largest island, and we wonder if a Canadian expeditionary force will ever take it over. And Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's all from Washington this morning.
The National Broadcasting Company brings you on-the-spot reports by staff correspondents at home and abroad each weekday morning at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Similar reports are heard on Sundays. Your newspaper lists the time and station. This is the National Broadcasting Company.